to put pressure on Washington. Now, at the moment when it feels that US is preoccupied with China.
Teaming up to counter the United States. It's Monday, December 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Chinese vaccines explained. Bravery honored in New Zealand. Hong Kong teachers deal with rising anxiety. Touching the sun. A long, wonderful life. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping presented a united front after a video summit amid heightened tensions with the United States and the West. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain tells us more.
Russian and Chinese media shone a spotlight on the phone summit Wednesday between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Putin became the first major world leader to declare that he would attend the Winter Olympics in Beijing, after the U.S. and several other countries had announced a diplomatic boycott. For his part, Xi pledged understanding and support for Putin's massive military buildup along Russia's border with Ukraine, which has alarmed the U.S., NATO, and the European Union, who say another Russian invasion, like its 2014 seizure of its neighbor Crimea, will trigger severe consequences, unlike anything Moscow has seen before. Some experts think Putin is testing President Joe Biden with a show of force.
Russia, Kremlin sees it appropriate at the moment to put pressure on Washington. Now, at the moment when it feels that U.S. is preoccupied with China.
Other experts note there was a lot of theater around the virtual summit between Putin and Xi, but add that the two leaders do seem to have a good relationship.
There seems to be sort of genuine chemistry between them, which is significant and not to be taken for granted. And I think it's also, you know, sort of clear that they're projecting a commonality of vision, that they have a certain agreement on the kind of world that they want to see, in which countries like Russia and China play a very substantial role and sort of write the rules. And tacitly, what is understood by that is that Europe and the United States are not meant to dominate the show.
Kimmage said economic ties between the two countries are flourishing because China is an enormous market for Russian energy.
This is, of course, the lifeblood of the Russian economy, and this is highly significant at a moment of real tension between Europe and Russia.
Kimmage said despite their pledges of a friendly alliance, it is unlikely that Xi or Putin could count on the other for military support in the event of a serious conflict with the United States, either in Ukraine or Taiwan. Alexander Gabuev of the Carnegie Moscow Center sees natural limits to the Sino-Russian partnership.
I guess that both Russia and China are religious about their strategic autonomy. There is deep-seated nationalism. There is some level of mistrust and some level of competition in many of those areas where there is seeming complementarity, like space programs.
Experts say a closer alliance between China and Russia poses a challenge to President Joe Biden, who needs to continue working closely with U.S. allies and stand up for issues of concern like the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Join us online at VOA Asia, Facebook, and Twitter to find out more on our top story. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Typhoon deaths in Philippines top 140. Mayors plead for food. Turnout down as Hong Kong votes in Patriots-only election. Osaka arson suspect identified. Buildings to be checked. Biden's China policy. Negotiate while preparing for a fight. U.S. Senate confirms ex-Chicago Mayor Emanuel to be ambassador to Japan. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and the voanews.com website. More now on VOA Asia. As the coronavirus pandemic continues its deadly sweep around the globe, health officials are racing to get as many vaccines into arms as possible. In this report on COVID vaccines, VOA's Carol Pearson looks at those made in China.
Sinovac and Sinopharm are the leading vaccine manufacturers in China, and each has produced vaccines that have been approved by the World Health Organization for use against COVID-19. Sinovac is a privately owned company, while Sinopharm is government-run. Chinese scientists use the same method to make both vaccines. Dr. Andrea Cox is a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. She says for vaccines like these, scientists take a virus or bacterium, inactivate or kill it, and inject it into people. Because the virus is dead, it can't infect anyone. Then, if a vaccinated person is exposed to the live virus, their body recognizes it and launches an attack to fight it off. But Cox says there's a downside.
The problem is that these inactivated vaccines are eliciting a different and a slightly, on average, less effective type of immune response. The Sinovac vaccine has been tested and been shown to be variably protective, but not quite as effective as some others out there.
The World Health Organization says the Sinovac vaccine is about 50% effective, but there are other important factors in making and distributing a vaccine. Sinovac says the vaccine significantly reduces the severity of a COVID-19 infection. The WHO reported Sinopharm at 78% effective. Two doses are needed for both vaccines. To make them even more effective, vaccines are often mixed with an adjuvant, a harmless ingredient like aluminum salts or a bubble of fat. On its website, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says aluminum is one of the most common metals found in nature and is present in food, air, and water. So it's not a foreign or dangerous ingredient, although anti-vax groups claim it is. For example, Sinovac uses aluminum hydroxide, an ingredient also used to treat an upset stomach. The Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines have a major advantage over some other COVID vaccines. They're easy to store and only need normal refrigeration. Until more effective vaccines are available, that's a huge plus in getting a COVID vaccine to people in remote areas. Again, Dr. Cox.
In an ideal world, we wouldn't need them, but at this point, we need a way to get the world vaccinated as rapidly and effectively as possible, and it may require use of vaccines that we know are not as good, but are better than not being vaccinated.
The World Health Organization says safe and effective vaccines are a game-changing tool, but for now, and for the foreseeable future, the WHO recommends continued mask wearing, frequent hand cleaning, good ventilation indoors, practicing physical distancing, and avoiding crowds, and, above all, getting vaccinated against COVID-19 when you can with whatever vaccine is available. Cox says we are lucky to have so many governments investing in the vaccines and so many top scientists working on making them.
Having the world's best scientists, and I do really mean the world's best scientists, thinking about how to make effective vaccines and deliver them to a global population is critical. And the more data we get on these vaccines, the more we will be able to select out vaccines that do protect the largest number of the world's population.
The WHO says it's not vaccines that will stop the pandemic. It's vaccination. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, fighting between Myanmar government forces and ethnic Karen guerrillas has caused about 2,500 villagers to flee across the border into Thailand to seek refuge, according to a Thai army officer. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. thank you for sharing your morning with us on VOA Asia. A man from Afghanistan who chased away a gunman who murdered 51 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand in March 2019 has been given the country's highest bravery award, the New Zealand Cross. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Abdulaziz is among 10 people recognized for their courage during the March 2019 attacks on two mosques in the New Zealand city of Christchurch. The former refugee from Afghanistan threw a credit card machine at the gunman after he'd opened fire at the Linwood Islamic Centre. He ignored the bodies of murdered worshippers and ran toward the attacker, chasing him with a rifle the gunman had discarded. Aziz has been awarded the New Zealand Cross for his courage. He told Radio New Zealand that he simply wanted to protect his fellow worshippers.
If I didn't do that, we would lose a lot of our brothers and sisters, including myself as well. On that time, I'll be honest with you, I didn't even think about any danger or anything.
Another worshipper, Naeem Rashid, who died in the shootings after confronting the gunman at the Al Noor Mosque, has been posthumously honoured with the New Zealand Cross. Officials said his bravery too had saved lives. In a statement, his widow, Ambry Naeem, said the award is not only for him, but for every peace-loving person who stands against hate. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the recipients of the bravery awards, including the two police officers who arrested the gunman, were selfless and extraordinary. Brenton Tarrant, a self-confessed white supremacist from Australia, is serving a life sentence for the shootings. He admitted to the murder of 51 people, the attempted murder of another 40 people who were injured, and one charge of terrorism. Many victims were migrants, including refugees from Syria, who went to New Zealand looking to escape conflict and violence. A judge said Tarrant's actions were inhuman. He will never be released from prison. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Voters went to the polls in Hong Kong, the first election since Beijing's overhaul of the city's electoral process. Turnout was reported to be extremely low. Many observers are asking, with no opposition candidate on the ballot, is it really free and fair? You'll find this in all the stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Right now on VOA Asia, in Hong Kong, students and teachers have been seeing a change in the classrooms this school year as a part of the national security law implemented by Beijing. Some, like the two teachers in this story, are expressing concern and anxiety. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports on changes inside Hong Kong classrooms.
On the surface, Hong Kong is still the bustling metropolis of Asia, but changes within school walls are causing anxiety among many veteran teachers.
Someone would say that nowadays being a teacher in Hong Kong is quite a risky, risky professional, risky job.
Adrian is a teacher who asked that we use just his first name out of concern he may face consequences for stating his opinion. Adrian teaches liberal studies classes that aim to develop critical thinking. The name of the course changed to Citizenship and Social Development after the 2020 implementation of Beijing's national security law.
In the past, we can very freely make comments on different policies and invite students to give their opinions on those policies. But now now we are afraid that some criticism on the policies may be accused of endangering national security or inciting hatred towards the government. So we do have worries, and so do the students.
Hong Kong's education secretary defends national security education in primary and secondary schools. In a statement carried by China's state-run Xinhua News Agency, the secretary said the curriculum gives students a clear understanding of the inseparable relationship between the country and Hong Kong, the One Country, Two Systems governance model, and the law's role in Hong Kong's prosperity and development. Karen, a Chinese studies teacher, also asked that VOA use only her first name, fearing consequences for speaking out. Karen says even though she's attended workshops on new teaching guidelines, she still is not sure what might get her into trouble.
The teaching atmosphere in this school has changed. This change in atmosphere affects our own autonomy, our teaching autonomy. The national security law does not clearly tell you what you cannot do.
Adrian says some of his colleagues have quit teaching and moved abroad. He says students who are not affluent or from mainland China are still in Hong Kong, while many wealthier families are considering a move abroad. And this is happening not just in secondary schools.
But now we see a trend that students are much younger. Some of them are considering going abroad when they're in primary schools because they can relocate with the family.
A survey by the Hong Kong Federation of Education Workers found 90% of kindergartens have fewer students this school year. The reasons include the pandemic, immigration, and a drop in the birth rate. Some parents at this immigration fair want their children to leave, but it's tough for 21-year-old Ken Chan.
Since I was born and raised in Hong Kong for over 20 years, and all my close friends are here, all of these are my concerns.
There's still some space for me to deliver some message that some values to the young generation. So I'm eager to stay for some more years so that I can do something for Hong Kong.
A desire Adrian hopes younger teachers will keep in mind as they decide whether to stay or leave Hong Kong. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, police have identified a man they say started a fire that killed 24 people in an 8-story building in the shopping and entertainment area of Osaka, Japan. He is a patient in a mental clinic located in the building. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, NASA touches the sun and looks to the future by traveling back through time. Plus, Japanese tourists visit the International Space Station, and a space travel pioneer's daughter follows in her father's flying footsteps. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
NASA, its Parker Solar Probe flew through the sun's atmosphere, sampling particles and magnetic fields. As Parker flies through the corona, that's the sun's atmosphere, it makes new discoveries that were impossible to study from afar. Scientists say those discoveries about our closest star may help us better understand more distant stars and the rest of the universe. Elsewhere, Japanese billionaire fashion tycoon Yusaka Maezawa and his personal videographer Yozo Hirano started a 12-day journey aboard the International Space Station. They blasted off from the Baikonur Launch Facility in Kazakhstan along with cosmonaut Alexander Masurkin. The trio joined the crew of the ISS, where Maezawa and Hirano became the first self-paying tourists there since 2009. The cost of the trip is unknown. Meanwhile, NASA launched its Imaging X-ray Polarimetry Explorer, or IXPE for short. IXPE's mission is to look at extreme space events to broaden human understanding of objects like neutron stars or spinning black holes. The Space Observatory carries three identical telescopes, each with dozens of mirrors, to collect and focus X-rays. IXPE's 2-year mission is to observe more than 50 objects like supernovas, as well as a supermassive black hole at the heart of our very own Milky Way galaxy. In other news, from a launch pad in Texas, private spaceflight company Blue Origin completed another successful launch and landing carrying more high-profile passengers. On board were American football star and broadcaster Michael Strahan and a special 74-year-old Laura Shepherd Churchley. 60 years ago, her father, Alan Shepherd, became the first American in space. Shepherd Churchley's roughly 10-minute flight happened aboard the new Shepherd rocket that bears her father's name. Blue Origin says the flight made history as having carried the first-ever parent-child duo, venture capitalist Lane Bess and his 23-year-old son, Cameron. Finally, NASA is preparing to launch the James Webb Space Telescope. NASA expects the telescope to allow humans to see further in the cosmos than ever before, ushering in a new era in astronomy.
What Webb is going to do, it's going to push beyond that, and it's going to be sensitive to galaxies that are more distant and younger, that really formed closer to the start of the universe.
The project faced countless setbacks and a near doubling in cost, with a total price tag north of $9.5 billion, but it's expected to be about 100 times more sensitive than its predecessor, the Hubble telescope. Scientists plan to use it to learn about the universe's history, dating back 13.8 billion years to just after the Big Bang. Blastoff is scheduled for Christmas Eve, December 24th. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
The small town of Seneca Falls, New York, is celebrating the 75th anniversary of a beloved Christmas movie at its annual It's a Wonderful Life Festival. As we hear from residents and visitors, many believe the town was the inspiration for Bedford Falls, home to the enduring main character, George Bailey.
The movie is about a man who lives in a small town, who never really feels satisfied in his own community, and he doesn't realize how important he is.
George Bailey means selflessness. George Bailey means caring. George Bailey means love thy neighbor. I think George Bailey is the best of us.
Zuzu, my little ginger snap, how do you feel?
It's always relevant. You know, there are times like, you know, right now where we're trying to survive this pandemic and we've had a lot of loss and a lot of stress. And can I identify with George Bailey and the wonderful message at the end where family and friends and everybody in town comes together to save him? And it's a beautiful message of hope.
I think it's a wonderful festival. It is great to see our downtown so busy and with so many out-of-town visitors, and everyone is very happy and glad to be here. And I think during this particular time, the message that the movie brings is more important than ever, and you feel that here in town.
This year, I think we're expecting better than 20,000 for the 75th anniversary festival. Personally, I'm very proud to live in Bedford Falls. The local population, the pride, the sense of pride in this has increased every year. You know, there are still people who doubt and think maybe it's not true, but even those people like the idea. I mean, who wouldn't want to live in Bedford Falls?
I was on the George Bailey Bridge. It must have been 10:30, 11 o'clock last night. Nobody around. I decided to do a classic thing of leaning on the bridge. I leant over the bridge, looking into the water. I felt some odd things on my nose and face. I thought, what on earth is that? I looked up and it was snowing. Not much, but it was snowing. And for a Welsh man coming to Seneca Falls for It's a Wonderful Life, that was the moment for me. I'm feeling emotional just now thinking about it. The snow on the George Bailey Bridge, you couldn't write it. Absolutely amazing. Sorry, I'm tearing up now.
I believe that everyone can identify with George. We have that opportunity to look at ourselves and realize that we too can make a difference. Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks for joining us today. You may continue with VOA Asia Online. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.